My Classic Album with Mike Norris is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of My Classic Album and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.
Hello everyone, welcome back to My Classic Album with Mike Norris, the show that looks back on some of the greatest albums in music history. I, of course, am Mike Norris, and thank you for returning after over a year since our last episode, a bit of an unexpected hiatus. Anyone who has listened to the podcast around that time will know that I had to take a bit of time to concentrate on my career outside of the podcast. But then, you know, our original episode, this return episode that we're going to be doing today, was originally meant to be released in July. So my chat with Frank Carducci, that you're going to hear very shortly about Pink Floyd's fantastic album Animals, was recorded back in June. And, you know, we had a lot of great conversation about that. I was really excited to get the episode online. And then I had some major IT malfunctions, which actually lasted several months. Regardless, it's good to be back. And I'm really excited for you all to hear my chat with Frank, who has picked a fantastic album that we're going to be talking about today. I'm really excited for you to hear my chat with Frank, and I've got a habit of rambling on when we do these introductions, so I'm going to get this one out of the way quite quickly. But there are a couple of things that I just want to say before we dive in to my chat with Frank about this fantastic album. Just to let you know, we've got some great episodes coming over the next month. Obviously, this fantastic chat that you're going to be hearing very soon. In a couple of weeks' time, on the 1st of November, we are going to be chatting with singer-songwriter Noosh Skougan. Now, some of you may recognise that name, or you may recognise her face from the E4 series Dead Pixels. And from what I can gather, I think that's just about to start airing in America as well. So our American fans are in for a treat. Hilarious show that I really enjoyed last year. And obviously managed to get in touch with Noosh, who has just released her latest album, Hey Sicko. We'll be talking a bit about that, but we'll also be talking about her chosen classic album, No Secrets by Carly Simon, and just kind of seeing how much of an inspiration Carly has been in her development as an artist. It's a really fascinating chat, really excited for you all to hear it. And then 2 weeks on from that, so on the 15th of November, we're going to do an anniversary episode for the first time in about 3 years. So we're going to be looking back 45 years at the opera, celebrating Queen's fourth album, their breakthrough album, A Night at the Opera. And my special guest, a returning face to the show, one of my favourite guests we've ever had on My Classic Album, Savannah Pope, is going to join me to kind of break that album down. And I know, you know, we did the soundtrack to the Rocky Horror Picture Show last year. I'd said to her at the time, if you could choose a studio album, what would you go for? And she chose the fantastic A Night at the Opera. So when the anniversary came, it seemed like the ideal time to just dive into it and get Savannah back on the show to go through it. So my chat with Savannah will be coming soon. As always with the anniversary episodes, I want to hear your thoughts on this album. There's going to be polls up for your favourite tracks on the album. Send me any ramblings, anything you want about A Night at the Opera, and the best stuff is going to get read on the show. So we've got 45 years at the opera. Before that, we've got No Secrets. But today, we're looking at Animals by Pink Floyd. A real turning point for the band. A really politically charged album. My guest, who chose the album, Frank Carducci, is here to chat about it. But before we get into my chat with Frank, let's just have a look at the facts. Here's what you need to know about Animals. Released on the 23rd of January 1977, Animals is the 10th studio album from British prog rock legends Pink Floyd. The album was recorded throughout 1976 at Britannia Row Studios in London. Following the success of their previous two albums, The Dark Side of the Moon and Wish You Were Here, Pink Floyd, under the urging of bassist Roger Waters, explored the political landscape of the UK through their new album.
creating a concept loosely based on George Orwell's 1945 novel, Animal Farm. With the majority of songs on the album deemed too long for radio, no singles were released from Animals, but the album was toured extensively during the In the Flesh tour that ran through the first half of 1977. Production of the album and the ensuing tour led to tensions increasing within the band, as Waters' role as the dominant creative force led to issues with other members of Pink Floyd. Animals continued Pink Floyd's dominance as one of the biggest bands of the 1970s, reaching number one across Europe. The album reached number three on the US Billboard charts, and number two on the UK album charts. Four times platinum certification in the US and gold certification in the UK helped contribute to worldwide sales of over 11 million copies over the last 43 years. While initially deemed bitter and inferior than their previous work, Animals has become regarded as an important part of Pink Floyd's most classic period. Louder Sound deemed it the fifth greatest album of Pink Floyd's career, while Rolling Stone named it the 13th greatest progressive album of all time in 2015. So that's just the beginning of everything we need to know about Animals. I have here today my special guest with me who chose the album to talk about today on My Classic Album. This is Frank Carducci. Hi Frank, how's it going?
Hey Mike, very good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, thanks for joining us. So before we kind of get into things too much, why is it Animals? Why have you chosen Animals to talk about specifically on My Classic Album today?
Well, it was really hard to pick an album, actually, because I have a lot of influences. I don't know if some people know some of my music, but my influences really go into the 70s British rock music. So I would say Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, Genesis, Supertramp, bands like this. But if you ask me my favorite album ever, the one I would keep on a desert island, I think that would be Pink Floyd Animals. So I think it was a good choice, and I'm glad it was free. It hasn't been done before in your show.
It's actually, we'll get onto this shortly, it's the first Pink Floyd album we've done, which is a bit quite surprising. What are your memories of hearing it for the first time?
Wow, that's a really long time ago. I think it was the cover, the artwork that caught my eye first, and I think when I was 12 or 13 years old, I discovered Pink Floyd through Dark Side of the Moon, and there was Wish You Were Here in my dad's library. And then a few months later, I wanted to dig a bit more into this band because I really loved the sound of it, you know, the Dark Side of the Moon. I mean, it's an amazing album. And then I discovered this Animals album with the Flying Pigs, you know, and I was like, wow, what the hell is this? I mean, it was so intriguing, and I really wanted to know more about this. So it was the artwork before the music, actually, that caught my eye.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reasonably late to kind of the Pink Floyd party, as it were. So, you know, while obviously I'm very much into my rock music and stuff, it was more kind of bands like Queen and Guns N' Roses, that more kind of classic rock rather than the prog rock when I was growing up. And it's only been the last few years that I've really got into Pink Floyd. I'd say there's no doubt, obviously, these albums that you're talking about, Dark Side of the Moon, Wish You Were Here, these really iconic albums, and of course The Wall as well. There's this period of around kind of 10 years in the 70s where kind of their output was just unmatched. What is it about these albums that you think, and this particular lineup of Pink Floyd, that's just so iconic?
That's hard to say, because I think it's one of the only prog rock band that appealed to everybody. I mean, old people, adult people, and young people. I mean, even children or teenagers, at least, they like Pink Floyd because there's something of a mystery in their music. There's something that you don't really comprehend at the first time, and you need to feel the need to listen to it another time and another time and another time. I remember, for instance, we were talking about Wish You Were Here, the intro of the Shine On You Crazy Diamond, you know, this very long and progressive intro. I think I listened to it for maybe 50 times before I started, because I was curious. I was like, what is this kind of music? And with Animals, maybe Animals is easier to apprehend, because it starts, it's the most rocking album that Pink Floyd made. And I think that's also why it's my favorite, because I'm also more in the rock. You know, I cited Led Zeppelin, but Guns N' Roses are also one of my big influence bands like this. And Pink Floyd, it's more atmospheric and slow and but Animals album, I think, is the more rock and the more heavy sound that they ever had. And that's how it started. And then I grew up even more and more fond of it the more I listened to it, with the rock sound, but also with the psychedelic atmosphere. And, you know, in the end, it's only three songs. You know, there's just an intro and outro, and the rest is three big songs. So it's it's very prog, but also very rock. For me, it's the perfect album.
I mean, having said all of this, that we're talking about this kind of phenomenal run of albums that they had, I feel like in some ways Animals is possibly the most underrated of that run.
I totally agree, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if we go from like Dark Side of the Moon up to Perhaps the Wall, those two albums are always in that conversation of the greatest album of all time.
Yeah, but also because they have hits like Money, like Another Brick in the Wall Part 2 or Comfortably Numb. They have short songs. In Animals, you don't have this. You have just this little acoustic intro and then the rest is just three big pieces that are over 10 minutes. So maybe it's less easy to get into it. If you listen to Dark Side of the Moon, probably you're going to, yeah, you have time, you have money. They're all 5-minute songs, so they're pretty standard time, all the songs.
Absolutely. Do you get the sense that Animals is maybe a bit of a dark horse in that sense, in this, at least in these kind of, these classic Pink Floyd albums, this classic period?
Yeah, possibly. I totally agree with you that it's underrated, but in the quality production for me is amazing. The quality of the production, the quality of the sound, the David Gilmour's guitar sound has never been as good as in Animals, in my opinion. And so, yeah, it's a bit strange. But again, I think it's the long tracks that tend to scare people away a little bit.
So I think the reason that, as I've kind of alluded to there, I've been kind of really hoping someone would pick a Pink Floyd album for some time now. In a way, I'm really glad that it was Animals, because I think there's a lot going on to unpick on this album. I feel like when we do these podcasts and people listen, there's usually kind of a story or a thread that we can get into. And I feel that there's almost three when we go into Animals. The first one is that it seems to chart kind of the rise of Roger Waters' role in the band. It's kind of throughout the decade, the band's getting built more and more in his image. And I think a lot of people point to Animals as that turning point. Would you agree with that? Do you think this is the point where it becomes a band that's very much in Roger's vision?
Yes, I think so, because I think all the pieces in Animals were written by Roger, or mainly written by Roger. And before that, there were some pieces written with the other guys, especially Gilmour. I think in Animals, because Animals is also kind of a concept album, you know, it's based on the story of George Orwell, the animal farmer, the book.
Yeah.
And so I think it's Waters who suggested to explore this theme by using images from the book. And so, of course, yeah, he's the most important writer in this album. And then after with The Wall, it was the same thing, because the whole thing in The Wall was his idea. So, yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah. And I think just to build on that a bit more in terms of kind of the state of the band, kind of what was going on around this time. Obviously, as we've said, Roger Waters was becoming kind of very much the creative visionary of what was going on. And there's talk that he would kind of arrive and leave the studio separately. David Gilmour's admitted that he'd become a father for the first time. He was somewhat distracted while Animals was being made. Richard was dealing with the end of his marriage. I've got a quote from Richard from a Pink Floyd biography, Saucer Full of Secrets. And he says that the Animals, he says, it was the first album for me where the group was losing its unity as well. That's when it was beginning, where Roger wanted to do everything. There are certain bits of the music that I quite like, but it's not my favourite album of the Floyd. And I think that's quite interesting that he would have that opinion of that. But I guess he was such a creative part of that process previously. It must have felt a bit strange to be taking a bit of a backseat to Roger at this time.
Yeah, I can understand what he felt, but I don't really feel it when I listen to the album, because I think Rick Wright has a very important part on it. The keyboard sound is amazing. The keyboard intro in the Ship song, I think it's a really great piece of keyboard. So maybe it's not as important as it was in Dark Side of the Moon and Wish You Were Here, but it's still more important than it was after that. Because in The Wall, you can see that he almost disappeared. He was not even part of the band anymore. I think he was fired by Waters. And in the Final Cut album, he didn't even play. But for Gilmour, I think you can still really hear him. First, he's singing a big part of the Dog song, which is the main song on the album. And also the guitar sound. I mean, the guitar sound in Animals. Animals, I think, is a much more guitar-oriented album than the previous album they made. So I agree and I understand. I think it was the beginning of Waters taking over the band, but it was not completely there yet, not as much as it was in The Wall. So I think, yeah, I think it's still good, because the genius, the creative genius of Waters, but still the other players, they still have quite big part in it, especially Gilmour. So yeah, maybe that's also why I like it so much.
Yeah, and I totally agree with what you're saying. I think that you know, we're not at that kind of, for lack of a better term, that kind of point of no return, really. You know, although David Gilmour said that he was somewhat distracted, he says he enjoyed working on the album, and he actually said that 90% of what we hear on Dogs was all him. That's what he said to in an interview with Mojo. Yeah. And Nick Mason has come out and said that he actually preferred working on Animals compared to Wish You Were Here. So again, that's the other side of the coin that, you know, it's not as if it was this like horrendous dictatorship at that point. It was just that obviously
certain members
were having different kind of levels of enjoyment of the process at that time.
Yeah, I think the dog song, it was a song that they played live for a few years before, and it was called You've Got to Be Crazy, and they were playing it live for years and years, and then Waters turned it into this dog song. But partly at least written by Gilmore in the previous years.
We've touched on the wall a bit already. Obviously, Roger's got a very extensive kind of back catalogue of solo work as well. And much like them, Animals is a very politically charged album. And obviously, we will talk about that more as we get into our chat. Is that part of the album's appeal for you? Do you like that kind of political slant on it? Or is it more, as you'd said, the fact that it's rocking, there's a lot of kind of the guitar and the prog elements to it?
Yeah, I think what appeals the most to me is this mix of psychedelic that they had in all the album, you know, the very atmospheric tracks, mixed with a very rock sound, and I think that's the rockest sound they ever made. So that's why it's the best album in my opinion. It's my favorite album. The political thing, and then I think it also came after the album, because I've seen Waters in his last tour, Roger Waters, I think it was 2 years ago, and he was using a big part of Animals. But it was anti-Trump and all kind of political thing that he changed. Like the pig had all kind of messages on it, the flying pig, you know. He also changed a little bit the meaning. So I'm not sure what he had in his head when he created it. Of course, it's his creation. But I think, the political came also a little bit after.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, you know, especially as I've said, being relatively new to their music and kind of discovering it for myself as time goes on, I certainly think it's one of their most rewarding albums that I've heard so far.
Oh, yeah.
I read an article by a lady called Madeline Taylor over at oxfordstudent.com, and she'd said until she heard Animals, she felt that she'd almost been missing the point with Pink Floyd. The first time you hear Animals is one of those moments that sticks with you. You aren't exactly sure why, but the emotional memory of it hangs around in your system, like discovering the truth about Father Christmas or learning your first swear word.
That's a very interesting remark, yeah. Me, I don't remember exactly when I heard it the first time, but like I said, it was a very long, long time ago. But what I remember is that I liked it right away. It didn't take me 10 listening or 20 or like Wish You Were Here. It took me quite a lot of time to dig into it. But this one, it was right away because the sound was, I still think that the sound is really amazing.
Yeah. And I think what makes it different to say, for example, Wish You Were Here or Dark Side of the Moon, There's certainly this kind of nihilistic element to it. It's almost as if someone's given you, I guess Roger is giving us kind of this firm reality check of his kind of perception of the world. And I can listen to those other albums and, you know, it's quite a chilled experience, you know, like I say, very psychedelic. Animals, and this, I almost mean this as kind of a compliment. I'm very much kind of alert when I'm listening to it. I'm very much kind of on edge to make sure that I don't miss anything. And I'm very much in the moment listening to it in a way that perhaps I'm not with those other albums.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. Also, he used a lot of sound effects. Of course, the animals, you hear the dogs barking and the sheep. So I think that also contributes to it, to create this completely strange and unexpected, especially at that time. Well, they did it before a little bit, of course, but I think that was still pretty new to incorporate all this kind of sound in the middle of the music.
Again, for anyone who's not listened to the album before, Animals is a reflection of humanity through the eyes of Roger Waters, and it uses three animals to represent kind of different pockets of society. So obviously, each of the tracks on the album are kind of representing these. So we've got the dogs, the pigs, and the sheep. As you touched on before there's a lot said about it taking inspiration from George Orwell's Animal Farm. And obviously that's something that people have talked about a lot. I've also heard people say it takes inspiration from a poem by a gentleman called Brian Patton called Meat. Have you read that poem? Or have you read Animal Farm? And can you say any similarities between either of those and the album?
No, not the first one, but the Animal Farm, I read it several times. So yeah, it's a book that I really like because I found it's at the same time quite funny and at the same time a very realistic vision of how a dictature can come up to work, actually, to work. So I think it was inspired by Russia at the beginning of the 20th century. And then, of course, to make it more accessible and to make it that everybody will enjoy it, he takes the animals instead of the human being, or instead of talking about race or color or country, he just takes races of animals. So the pigs are the chief that are mistreating other animals, and then there are some animals who understand that something's going wrong, but they don't have the courage to move. And then there are those who follow, like the sheep, they follow the dogs, they obey to orders. They are like the army in this society. So I think it was a very smart way to apprehend the subject of the dictatorship. I think it's a very, very nice book because you can read it as a child and appreciate it. You can read it as an adult and appreciate it on another level. And I think that's very interesting. So, of course, for the music of Pink Floyd, it's more the negative part because it's Roger Waters and he always had this very pessimistic view on human beings and human societies. But I think the book is amazing. I read it a few times and always enjoy reading it and reading it again.
Yeah. The album turned 40 in 2017, which wasn't really that long ago. And in that time, when we were kind of celebrating its 40th anniversary, a lot of people really picked up on the political themes within animals. And it felt kind of more appropriate and more relevant than ever before, kind of with the rise of people like Nigel Farage and Donald Trump, political events like Brexit. Would you agree? Do you think Animals resonates as strongly, if not stronger, than when it was recorded?
Yeah. I'm not an expert in politics, but I'm sure it does, because I think when I've seen it live a couple of years ago, and it was he used a lot of the Animals material to pass his political message, which I don't have an opinion about. Sometimes I think it's even too much because you're going to a rock concert, you're not going to a political conference. But then that's his thing, and nothing to. I don't have any lesson to give him, so he does what he thinks is good. But yeah, totally. And it's what's interesting in the animals in the album and in the book is the way a society which is first a democracy turns little by little into a dictature. And that's what's the interesting part, actually, is the way how at some point you see this society which is completely dictatorial, and you wonder, how did we get there? And this book is an explanation or an interpretation of how we could get there. Of course, it's a bit parodic because it uses the animal, but it's still, I think it's still relevant today, more than ever, actually.
And as I touched on kind of earlier on there, I feel that there's sort of three strands to this. So obviously, we've talked about that political side of things. We've talked about the dynamics in the band at the time. I think another thing that gets kind of picked up a lot when we talk about Animals, kind of the time it was released in 1977, was that in some ways, it was the band's reaction to the punk movement of the late 70s. That obviously, these bands that had kind of really come into their own in the early 70s and in the late 60s, all of a sudden we're fighting against this big movement of punk at the time. You know, would you agree that this is Pink Floyd's way of reacting to punk? And if so, kind of, how do you think they did?
It's possible, especially I heard this story that the guy from the Sex Pistols had a t-shirt, "I hate Pink Floyd," I think, and they called them rock dinosaurs, stuff like that, names like this. And I think it was, in the mid-70s. And then they come up with this album with three big, huge pieces, because that's what Animals is made out. Again, if you remove the little intro and the little outro, which is just 1 minute or something, the rest is just three big pieces. So I think it could have been inspired by the fact that they were called dinosaurs.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because that anger at society that's obviously showcased in Animals, and again what was going on in the late 70s at the time, that was also woven into punk as well, and that's kind of how that sort of built up. So, but it seems to me that the bands who navigated that storm of punk at the time were the bands who weren't afraid to adapt. So obviously, in some ways, I feel like they really played to their strengths. Like you say, these really, you know, if you ignore the intros, which we will be talking about, you know, all of these songs are over 10 minutes long, obviously very much in that kind of prog vein. But at the same time, as you've said, arguably kind of the heaviest rock album that they released. To go back to kind of Queen, they were releasing News of the World around that time. Again, they made sure to adapt because they were another big target of the punk bands. I do, you know, and again, this is coming from kind of a big Queen fan. I think that maybe Pink Floyd did it best with Animals, kind of really putting out a statement of who they were as a band at that time.
Yeah, and I don't think they wanted to adapt Pink Floyd. I don't think Roger Waters was the kind of guy who was going to follow any fashion or any rules like this. I think he always did what he wanted to do, and still does now, actually. So I don't think he was going to adapt, or I couldn't have imagined Pink Floyd doing some kind of punk thing just because it was the right thing to do at that time, the right fashion. I think they didn't really care about these things, and they were already very well established since the 60s. so they didn't really need to move or change their style.
So, I mean, if there's one thing that they've always excelled at, and obviously you have touched on, this is the thing that lured you into the album at the first place, you know, the art of the album cover. And all of those albums we've mentioned today have these kind of iconic album covers. Animals is no different, you know, having that shot of Battersea Power Station, that inflatable pig that, you know, we've talked about it a few times already, an essential part now of any Floyd or Waters show since. What is it about that cover? So, you know, when you'd said, obviously, it immediately struck you, you know, what was it about it and what makes it so appropriate for an album like Animals?
It's strange because, you know, I grew up in France and I didn't know British history that much. When I discovered the album, I didn't know the Battersea Power Station. Of course, now, each time I go to London, I have to play the Pilgrim and go there because just because of this, you know. But at that time, when I discovered it, I was a teenager. I didn't really know what that was. It's just such an intriguing picture, and this flying pig on top of the huge chimney, and the color also is very dark. So you understand that there's something very dark to it, but then in the meantime, you don't really understand. I mean, and it's funny because this is a cliche that has been reused. Then I remember when there was the London Olympics, they used the flying pigs, and also these flying pigs on the Battersea Station, and you can also see in a couple of movies. So that, yeah, I think that's funny that they use this this image. Again, I was a teenager. I didn't know London. I didn't know what this was. It was just intriguing. And so first there was this, well, Dark Side of the Moon, you don't really know because it's just a triangle with some colors. But the Wish You Were Here, you know, with that guy shaking hands with the other guy who was on fire. First, that was the first mystery artwork. And then comes this huge factory with big chimneys with this flying pig on top of it. And like, wow, what is this? It's like there's a secret message in it. But of course, when you're a teenager, you don't get it, but you want to. So it makes you want to understand. If you see a cover of the Rolling Stones, you know, with their faces on it, you know it's the Rolling Stones or the Beatles or whatever, crossing the street or something. But when you see this, it's like much more complex, and it kind of calls you to look for it, to search what's behind this, what's the message, what's the secret message behind this. And that's what I like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think now seems a good time to get into track by track. So, you know, as we said, there's only five tracks on the album, but obviously yeah. three of them are pretty gargantuan. So we'll see where we end up. But we'll start with Pigs on the Wing, part one. So, you know, as you've touched on, this album's kind of bookended by two little kind of, can't be any more than 2 minutes either side of this song, Pigs on the Wing. And obviously we'll talk a bit more about part two later and its significance there. But for anyone who hasn't listened, you know, Pigs on the Wing, part one, is simply Roger Waters and his acoustic guitar. When you think about kind of the intro to Dark Side of the Moon, or you think about kind of that intro to Shine On Your Crazy Diamond, as you said, these really kind of progressive, ambient, mysterious openings, this is very different. What are your thoughts on it as an album opener?
Yeah, it's a strange opener, I have to say. I think it used to be a whole track, this one and the end, and then there was a guitar solo in the middle, and then they cut it into two short tracks. I think it was nice because I was learning to play guitar at that time, and that was one of the only songs that I could play alone on my own. You know, there was also a couple of songs from The Wall that you could play on guitar, not too hard. It's just a nice little ballad. At the time, I didn't really get what the lyrics were about, but it didn't really matter because, you know, when you're a teenager, you're just learning music and you love bands and you don't really need to understand everything, what was the message behind the lyrics. So, yeah, this is just a small ballad, and it's a bit strange because that's not what I expected from an artwork, from a cover like this. So it starts with this very, but it's so short that you don't really even have the time to get into it, and it's already, dogs are already there.
Yeah, and from what it seems like, it was an intentional decision on Waters' part to bring like a bit of levity to proceedings. That obviously Pigs on the Wing, kind of both sides of it, are a lot lighter than the rest of the stuff we're going to hear on the album. And he told Capital Radio at the time, "I thought it was very necessary, otherwise the album would have been a kind of rage." Would you agree with him there? Do you think it's important to have these kind of brief moments either side for what is a very heavy album?
Yeah, I agree with this. I tend to always do the same thing when I make my own album. There's always one or two tracks that are very soft like this and very more accessible maybe. But I still think it's a strange choice to put it first. But of course, yeah, for Animals, I'm so used to it that for me, the album is like it is and I wouldn't change it. Still, if I had to make an album, I don't think I would start with this. I don't think I would dare to start an album with a short track like this, because you always tend to think that people, if they're going to listen to the first track, if they don't like it, they're going to stop, you know. So of course, for Pink Floyd, it might be different because they were very established at the time, so they didn't really care about people stopping listening after 2 minutes. Yeah, I think it's a brave choice, but I wouldn't do it.
So Nick Mason stated in the past that Pigs on the Wing is in fact a love song to Roger's then-wife Carolyn, stating she was the only one of Waters' friends that he'd ever met who could hold her own in an argument with him, and he had to be very good with semantics to win an argument against Roger Waters, which I firmly believe. But it's just nice to know that, you know, amongst that darkness of this album, and we talked about how, you know, there's an element of that Lover's music is very political and pessimistic, but that he did leave that space for that light, do you know what I mean? And to have that moment to kind of just kind of have that, you know, dedication to his wife at the time.
Yeah, yeah, especially because, yeah, the first part, if you, I always, now, because I know it so well, I consider it as a whole track, The Pigs on the Wing, part one and part two. And the first part is very pessimistic, like you said, but the last part is very optimistic and much nicer. So yeah, I don't really know why they cut it into two parts and put one in the beginning and one in the end. I agree, yeah, it's kind of a love song. Strange love song, but it's kind of a love song, yeah.
And that's Frank Carducci there chatting with me about Pink Floyd's politically charged album Animals. And we will get back to that conversation in just a little bit. As always, you know, if you have any thoughts about the album, the episode, my chat with Frank, anything like that, by all means, get in touch on our social media pages. So get yourself onto the Facebook page, My Classic Album with Mike Norris, in the search box. Follow My Classic Album Podcast on Instagram, or follow at MCA Podcast on Twitter. And as always, all this information and anything you need to know about upcoming episodes is available on www.myclassicalbum.co.uk. So we'll get back to my chat with Frank in just a little bit, but what I'd like to do first, and I love it when I get this opportunity to do so, I'd love to play you a song from Frank's latest album, The Answer, which came out in November last year. This is a fantastic track, and I'm sure that Pink Floyd fans will enjoy it, absolutely. Frank, he was planning to be touring around this time in the UK, but obviously with kind of the corona restrictions going on at the moment, it looks like it'll be next year. But by all means, when he does, obviously we'll let you know on our pages when he is. Here is a fantastic song from his album, The Answer. This is Love Is The Answer. So we'll move on to dogs. Obviously, we've touched quite a bit on dogs already in kind of the early part of our chat. As you'd said yourself, this started life as being performed as early as 1974, and it was called You've Got to Be Crazy. So, you know, the music carried over, the lyrics were retooled somewhat to fit in with this concept, and Dogs was born. Obviously, I know that, you know, there are versions of You've Got to Be Crazy out there. Have you heard them, and is that evolution obvious between the two songs?
I've heard a few of them, but they're very, very bad quality. I've heard a few on YouTube, but they're very bad quality recording. So it's hard to judge. But yeah, I think it's in the end, it's a fantastic track. Couldn't really appreciate the original. It was a bootleg somewhere on YouTube, and I listened to it a couple of times, and then I thought I'd rather listen to the real deal. Even though this is the real one, yeah, because they wrote it first.
So interestingly, David Gilmour stated in interviews that You've Got to Be Crazy was initially too wordy. So, you know, a far cry from if you think about Dogs and kind of these big, long kind of like instrumental passages that dominate this track. He said, once in a while, I would find something uncomfortable to sing. The first lot Roger wrote for Dogs was when it was called You've Got to Be Crazy. There were just too many words to sing. Dogs had so many words, I physically couldn't get them in. We had to cut out 2/3 of his words to make it possible rather than impossible. Whoa. Which is just really interesting. From those kind of ones that you've heard, I know you'd said the quality wasn't great. Do you get that sense? There's a lot of lyrics packed into it. Does it feel very different in that sense?
I wouldn't know. I didn't know this interview, so I wouldn't know about the quantity of the lyrics. Really, I don't know.
So, right back in episode 5, I think it was, of My Classic Album, we looked at Bob Dylan's 1997 album, Time Out of Mind, and that closes with a track called Highlands, which is 16 minutes and 31 seconds. Obviously, Dogs beats that, it clocks in at around 17:04, 17:06,
yeah,
making it the longest song we've ever covered here on the podcast. Yet, anyone who hasn't listened to it, absolutely, like, pause the podcast, go and listen to it, come back, because even though it's a 17-minute song, it holds your attention for the whole time. And essentially, as you've said, other than kind of that first part of Pigs on the Wing, this is covering an entire side of vinyl. How do you think Dogs manages to do that, to kind of last so long and yet hold our attention for the whole time?
I think that's so first the intro, and then there's the story, and then so the first part is sung by David Gilmour, and then there's this long instrumental part with the dog howling and all kind of things happening in the background, and then it starts again with the intro. But this time it's sung by Roger Waters. So I think it's like it's almost like a brand new song, but you recognize the theme because you heard it before. Then there's so much into this song. I mean, the guitar solo played with two guitars. So David Gilmour is playing the solo twice with harmonies on the guitar. I think also the sound of the guitar solo is amazing. So I don't think you really get fed up at one point, even though, yeah, it is quite long. But they don't let you... Well, maybe this middle part, this middle instrumental part with the dogs barking and stuff, it's a bit, it's a bit atmospheric part, and maybe they lost a few listeners at that moment, I don't know. But, I mean, the quality of the acoustic guitars, even in this part, in this instrumental part in the middle, there's these acoustics. You have one on the left side, one on the right side. If you listen to it with a headphone, it has an amazing stereo effect because David Gilmour played almost the same part with the two guitars, but not exactly the same part. But almost. So it sounds like there's a delay. It sounds almost like one guitar because they play the same part, but there's like some kind of delay. And it's because it delayed a little bit the second one compared to the first one. So it creates something very, very exciting. I mean, I love to listen to this on with the headphones just for this. And of course, yeah, the dogs barking. So much happening. The keyboard, the keyboard layers with the Hammond organ, even the drums. I mean, I know Nick Mason might not be the most interesting drummer ever played in a rock band, but in this album and especially in this song, Dogs plays quite heavy, and that's not what we. I mean, he's not really used to play this way with the big sound on the toms and the big bass drum. And so yeah, no, I don't think you get bored. I never get bored of hearing it, and I think I heard it a million times or something.
Yeah, and I think obviously we've talked about David Gilmour a lot, and you know, there's a reason that he's held in such high esteem. There's a reason why, you know, he's regarded as one of the greatest guitarists of all time, you know. Definitely. And I think, as I said, for me, kind of just kind of digging into this over the last few years, I think for me, you know, I love guitar players who are fantastic and technical, know what they're doing, but I think there's something about playing with emotion and knowing what notes to play to kind of strike that emotion. And I think that's something he's just fantastic at. Like I particularly kind of his work on Dogs, I really feel it in a particular way. Would you say, you know, obviously this is a guy who's kind of given us amazing guitar work on things like Money, Comfortably Numb, of course, is one that always comes up. Would you say that Dogs is his finest hour?
Oh yeah. For me, even more. But again, these tracks are less known than this track is less known than Money or Constantinum. The fact that he took the time to play all the same solo with the harmonies, doubling the harmonies, I think it takes even in the sound of the song, you know, it makes it much more deep and much more powerful. I think I don't know how they counted the time of the solo. I don't know if Roger Waters told Gilmour, hey, you can have the solo as long as you want, man, or you only have 8 bars or 16 bars or something like this. I guess the solo was so good that there was nothing you can do about it. And again, like you said, David Gilmour is one of the best. For me, he's one of the most moving guitar players. He can just play one note, and he will move my heart much more than another guitar player would play the 100 notes at the same time. But you don't feel anything, you know.
No, absolutely. And you know, to dig into kind of the lyrical content of the song a bit more, you know, you explained really well earlier on about kind of the roles of like the dogs, the pigs, the sheep on this album. And as we said, the dogs are almost kind of representative of that kind of cutthroat world of business and representative kind of businessmen. I think was it that you were saying that they're aware that there's kind of problems, but they're almost kind of like the army in that sense, or kind of sort of maintaining it, if you like. Why do you think the dogs work so well as a metaphor in this instance for those type of people?
I wouldn't know how to answer that. I just know it works, but yeah, that's a really tough question for me. I wouldn't know. It just does work, but I wouldn't know how to explain it.
No. And sometimes that's the beauty of it, isn't it? You know, we don't need to explain it. It just works.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'd said earlier on, obviously, that David Gilmour had told Mojo magazine that Dogs was 90% his. And obviously, we were having that conversation there where you were saying, like, we don't know whether Roger was like, well, just go to town, do what you want, or whether he was saying, you know, you've only got this much. But it sounds that perhaps, you know, if Dogs was so much of David's vision, you know, perhaps this was more of a collaborative effort than others might give it credit for.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And something that's really strange is that David Gilmour never covered it, never played it live in his solo concert, whereas Roger Waters often does, which is strange because I think it's much more guitar oriented. So I'm not surprised when you say that it's, I don't know how much you say, 80% of the Gilmour song, yeah, something like that.
I think he said 90%,
that's about. Yeah. So yeah, I don't understand actually why David Gilmour never plays it live, because it would be a great song to play live. I've seen Waters play it and it was amazing. Yeah. And of course, it misses the voice and the guitar of Gilmour on it.
So, I mean, this kind of stuff that we're talking about, it almost leads into some kind of disagreements there that obviously a lot of bands around this time had around royalties when the album was released. So, as you said, Roger Waters is credited on all of the songs. David Gilmour is credited on Dogs, but that's it. Obviously, yeah. Mason and Wright have no writing credits on Animals. And I believe that might have been the first time in the band's history that Wright didn't. So that caused this kind of discontentment in that obviously Waters was entitled to a lot more royalties than the rest of the band. And when you think to yourself, you know, Dogs, a 17-minute long track, it's taken up pretty much a whole side of vinyl. The rest of that is taken up by about a minute's worth of Pigs on the Bay, yet Roger's probably getting more money from that. And I think it's more evidence towards these kind of creative, professional differences that are just starting to surface around this time that the album's been recorded and released.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly how the percentages were declared. That's not something we're aware of. But I guess, I'm guessing Gilmour gets more for Dogs than what Waters gets for Pigs on the Wing. I mean, it would make sense because, like you said, it's 17 minutes and it's a lot of guitar work in this song. Mainly guitar. It's very, very guitar oriented song. But then I totally agree with you that it might have contributed to tension in the band. I'm not sure Nick Mason had the rights on the songs on the albums before, maybe on the very early albums, but I don't think he had. Or maybe something in the Dark Side of the Moon also. And for Rick Wright, I think he also had, he always had some credits on some of the songs, at least until Dark Side of the Moon, on which you were here, I'm not sure. So yeah, I guess the times were really changing for the band at that 1976, 1977, because yeah, Waters was clearly taking over. But on the other hand, if you hear him, if you ask him, he would say that he was the only one that was willing to lead the band, and the other one, they were not that interested as much. I remember a quote where he said that Rick Wright was always on holidays with his wife in Greece and something like this, and he was not really interested in writing new songs and working on new material, whereas Waters probably had not other things to do, so that might also explain, I don't know.
And that's exactly it. There's two sides to every story, isn't
there? Exactly. Yeah, of course.
And that's exactly it. So we'll move on to Pigs, three different ones. So we're now on side two of the album. as you really eloquently explained before, unlike the dogs who kind of represent that kind of cutthroat business world, the pigs are representing those at the top of the social ladder. They're going to kind of manipulate,
exactly,
conspire,
yeah,
to stay,
exactly,
there.
Yeah.
So in spite of this song being another song over 10 minutes long, it's set around these three verses. And from what we know, each focuses on a different pig, which hence the title, Three Different Ones. We do know the identity of one of those in the third verse, which we'll get to shortly. Obviously, there's not much around the other two. Have you ever had any theories about, do you think there is a specific, with those other two verses, do you think there is a specific target? Or do you think it is just generally talking about those types of people?
I think at the beginning it was more general. I'm not sure. But I think when it was written, I think it was more general. But now he uses it, of course, to target whoever he wants to target. So in the last show, he used it. The whole pig song was turned against Donald Trump. So there was all kind of caricature and quotes from Trump and all kind of things. And even quote from the song when he says, "Sharad, you are." I think it was very appropriate to his point. I mean, I don't mean I agree with him. But it was very appropriate, and he really made it. It really made his point when he said, "Sharad, you are." And most of the lyrics were really, really to the point and relevant. But I don't know when he wrote it with the target at that time. I wouldn't know because, again, it was probably British history of the 70s, which I'm not aware of. So I wouldn't know.
And I think, I mean, obviously, we'll get to the third verse shortly. That's obviously. There's never been any kind of definitive confirmation on if he was targeting anybody, if there was a specific target. I've read stuff that the second verse might potentially be aimed at Margaret Thatcher, who was obviously the leader of the opposition at the time. She wasn't prime minister yet. The third verse, and it's been pretty much confirmed in quite a few places. I think Roger might have confirmed it himself, that it's taken aim at a morality campaigner and an activist, Mary Whitehouse, who was a very polarizing figure in the 70s. And obviously that kind of comes through in the lyrics and stuff as well. But even that verse, because there is kind of an allusion to, obviously, to her surname, Whitehouse, that made a lot of kind of American Pink Floyd fans think that the band were attacking Gerald Ford, who was president at the time, obviously Whitehouse. So it's quite interesting, kind of, you know, regardless of who these targets were, regardless of kind of who he had in mind when he wrote them, the beauty of music is that we can kind of interpret it ourselves and it can translate so differently.
Exactly, and especially this music is so profound, it's so deep that there's so much into it that you can listen to it, to the same track several times and think about completely different things and interpret it in a completely different way. And I think that's one of the main strengths of Pink Floyd, is that the layers they put in the music let the listener go pretty much wherever he wants to go with the song. So it's like, okay, I give you some material and then do whatever you want to do with it. And that's probably also why the lyrics are not very clear and very precise. Otherwise, it would not touch that many people, I think. If it's a specific target, then you would have some people who like it, some people who don't agree. But it stays a bit vague so that everybody can somehow get their own interpretation. Yeah, I think that's also one of the strengths of Waters as a songwriter. I think he's a wonderful songwriter because some of the tracks, even for me, I mean, English is not even my main language, and I remember I was a teenager, I was trying to translate the songs, and then you could dream on, you know, you could travel with these words that were maybe not in the way that he wrote it, but it doesn't matter because then it doesn't belong to him anymore. You just listen to the song and you do whatever you want with it. Same thing, I was covering it, I was playing this song with some garage bands I was playing with at that time, and in the end we didn't really care what it was exactly about. It was just wonderful to play. And so yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why he stays vague about the target. Of course, afterwards in interviews, he can always say exactly what he meant. Clearly now, this Pigs is his Donald Trump song in the last 3-4 years.
And it's really interesting that you touch on that, because obviously that's something that came up a lot in kind of my research of the song, that at the moment he does use pigs as an opportunity to attack Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know, initially those images were as blatant as saying "fuck Trump" on the screen before it changed to "Trump is a pig," which obviously alludes it more to the album and the song.
Yeah, of course.
This has actually caused some people, I'm guessing in America, actually caused some people to kind of boo at those moments or even walk out of his shows. It sounds like that's a minority rather than a majority by any stretch. And he did speak to NME a little bit about it. And when he was asked about it, he said, "I find it slightly surprising that anybody could have been listening to my songs for 50 years without understanding," which is a fair point. And he said to those critics, he said, "If they didn't really like what he was doing, go and see Katy Perry or watch the Kardashians. I don't care.
Yeah, so. Of course he doesn't care. He doesn't care. I mean, he's got nothing to prove to any to nobody. It's the same with when he talks about Israel government, because he's strongly against politics of the Israel government. But so of course, a lot of people hate him because of that, because of his position on this subject. But I mean, he doesn't care. And he's probably one of the only artists in the world who can afford to not to care about this. Because, of course, most of the artists, they have contracts, they have tour, they have all kinds of things. And it's really hard to attack a community so strongly as he does it. Whether or not he's right or wrong is none of my business. But the way he does it is somehow very brave, because he takes the risk of being not allowed in some place or being criticized all the time. And he doesn't care. He doesn't care at all. But I think he has nothing to prove to anybody anymore.
I've noticed a lot of people have kind of mentioned sort of strong musical similarities between Pigs and Have a Cigar from Wish You Were Here.
Yeah, I think it's in the groove. It's in the drum, bass and drum groove that's a little bit similar. But on the other hand, Nick Mason is not a very technical drummer like you see these days. So I think he was kind of limited in the way he could drum. It's not surprising that you see some similar patterns from an album to another. I think if you listen to a part of Echoes in the middle album, you also recognize some kind of little bit of the groove, which is amazing. But it's a little bit similar also to this.
So obviously, you know, we've talked about obviously the song, the cover, a huge kind of almost a cultural mainstay now that's kind of carried over from this period is the use of pigs, to the point where we've got, like, you know, the inflatable pigs kind of on any, you know, on the album cover, on subsequent tours by Pink Floyd and Roger Waters. In fact, when he left the band, there was this very kind of messy war about who had the legal rights to that pig, as I recall.
Yeah. But now they're both using it. I've seen it at the Pink Floyd concert in the 90s, and I've seen it at the Roger Waters concert as well. So I guess they settled on that.
I can't remember which way around this is, because I know initially it was a sow. Was it Pink Floyd who put balls on it?
Was it Pink Floyd who what? Sorry?
Who put balls on it, like testicles?
Oh, I don't know.
One of them did, and I'm going to have a look after we've chatted, but I think that was their way around it.
Yeah. I think it was probably Roger Waters' idea. It's like, I don't know if you know the story of when they shot the picture, because they did it in 2 days. Because the first day, it was not good, the weather was not good enough for the pictures. And so the first day, they did it. So the photographer came and everything, and they had this huge inflatable pig, of course. And they had someone with a weapon to shoot the pig in case he would fly away, because they were not allowed to let a huge pig like this fly away. It could disrupt the planes and the traffic and stuff like this. So the first day they came with this guy who was ready to shoot it out, to shoot it in case it got lost, you know. And it didn't get lost, but the next day they say, oh, there was no good enough picture because of the weather. The weather was not good enough. It was not clear enough. So they say, we have to do it again in a couple of days. So 2 or 3 days later, they came back. And then, strangely, again, a mystery, the guy who was supposed to shoot, the guy with the weapon, was not there. And, of course, what was supposed to happen happened at the end when they shook all the pictures. They let it fly away. And so this huge inflatable pig flew away. And then, of course, there were some planes flying over at I don't know, really, really high in the sky. And they saw this huge pig. So they called the I don't know how you call it, the central who controls the whole traffic in the UK. And they said that there's a huge inflatable pig flying. And, of course, the people at the control, they couldn't believe it. So then it took some time with the radars and stuff, and in the meantime the pig slowly went down. And then they found it 2 or 3 days before, I think 60 miles away from London in a field. And it was a farmer who called the police, because he said, I found this huge piece of plastic in my field. I didn't know what it was. And it was then. But of course, afterwards, they said that the guy who was supposed to shoot was sick that day. But of course, nobody believes it. And of course, they know that once they got their picture, they just let it fly. So I think it was a funny story.
So we'll move on to sheep now. So similar to dogs, Sheep started life as another song that Pink Floyd were performing live while they were touring and promoting Dark Side of the Moon, and that song was called Raving and Drooling. Again, this evolved musically and lyrically into Sheep. Have you heard much of Raving and Drooling, and how does it compare to Sheep that we're talking about?
No, now? I don't remember. Maybe I heard it a long time ago, but I don't remember. I don't really like to listen to these bootlegs concerts that are very bad quality. I don't really like to listen to that. But I know that Pink Floyd are very famous for experimenting their songs live before recording them. I think for Dark Side of the Moon, they played it live, the whole album, they played it live for a year and a half before recording it. So, of course, it's very nice to do this. And that's something I always wanted to do, and I did it in my latest album, actually, half of it. I played it live for 2 years before recording it. And it's really interesting process because you write the song. If you record them right away, they're going to be like you wrote them. If you play them live for a year or two, they're going to evolve based on how even if you don't do it on purpose, but they're going to evolve based on the public reacts to it, based on what worked, based on the weak. You also discover some weak points that you wouldn't have discovered if you just record them live right away. So, yeah, so I'm not surprised, but Pink Floyd, they were really famous for doing this. And for me, it has always been an inspiration, and I always wanted to do this.
So the website Get Into It have high praise for Sheep, and they highlight the important role that Gilmore and Wright play on the track. So they say the album's penultimate track benefits greatly from Wright and Gilmore's contributions. It begins with the sound of sheep grazing and Wright's memorably jazz-infused electric piano. That establishes a mood of uncertain foreboding before giving way to that aggressively sung and played verse. Obviously, you've touched a bit kind of throughout of how important do you think his performance is on the album? When it comes to kind of Sheep, what are your thoughts on his performance, particularly here?
I think, first of all, I think Sheep is probably the heaviest song that they ever played. So the keyboard intro is very soft, but then the rest of the song is very aggressive, and the guitar is very aggressive, at least for Pink Floyd. I'm not comparing with a heavy metal band. But for Pink Floyd, the song is very aggressive. And the guitar riff at the very end of the song is at the same time very catchy, but also very rock and roll, actually, I could say. Like, that could be, like you were talking about Guns N' Roses, that could be a kind of riff that Slash would play in a song at the end of a song like November Rain or something like this. So I think it was very inspiring for a lot of artists to be able to mix different kind of music like this into this track. Again, this song is a little bit like Dogs for me, but also kind of keyboard and guitar oriented. And then of course there's the singing of Water singing, which is he's screaming actually. That also adds to the energy of it.
One of the things I really like about this song, obviously, again, just to kind of catch people up, if the pigs and the dogs relate to that higher part of society, the sheep are like the mindless, the docile, you know, they can't think for themselves almost. And I think what I really like about this song is that kind of deep in there, if you kind of listen, there's a rewritten version of Psalm 23, so the Lord is my shepherd. You know, I've heard conflicting opinions, that obviously one of the lines that changes is into, he converteth me to lamb cutlets. Which some people find that really chilling, while others feel it kind of verges on parody and it's kind of that British sense of humour. Have you always took it as kind of like a moment of humour, or do you think it is kind of alluding to something a bit more sinister?
No, for me it was kind of humour, always. Especially because he doesn't speak it with his own voice. He's using a vocoder machine. Mm-hmm. So that makes it like an extraterrestrial voice, kind of an alien voice. So I always thought it was some kind of sense of humor, and maybe he was mocking religion a little bit, because the part of religion has on society, and to have people following what they have said without thinking too much, you know. So maybe it was also the intent. But I think for me it was mainly humor.
So, you know, perhaps unexpectedly on Animals, the sheep actually rise up against the pigs. So that kind of leaves the album approaching the end on an optimistic tone. Why do you think that Roger potentially made that decision to go in that direction? Do you think that was maybe a bit of wishful thinking there, or perhaps even a prediction of what he thinks might happen if kind of society continues in the way that it was and is, I guess?
That's a tough question. I wouldn't know. I think maybe he didn't want to be, because there was a lot of pessimistic vision already in The Dark Side of the Moon, and Wish You Were Here is also quite sad album. So I think I read somewhere that he didn't want to be always on the negative side of, always put on the negative side of things, and maybe he wanted to finish, because also the last track, the Pigs on the Wing, part two, is also, this one is kind of optimistic love song, like you said. So I think that maybe he didn't want to be the cliche guy who's always pessimistic about human society, I wouldn't know for sure.
He did say in 1978 the song had been somewhat inspired by the 1976 Notting Hill riots in West London. And as we've said, obviously, you don't need to know that information to enjoy the song or to get your own meaning from it.
No,
but obviously, at least that's what's inspired him. And he said he described it as my sense of what was to come down with the riots in England. So again, it's kind of drawn. And as we've said, I think we've both quite wisely tried to avoid kind of getting into too much kind of politics because we're talking about music. But inevitably with this album, we have to touch on it. But all these years after, you know, it is still kind of really relevant in terms that, you know, when you think about kind of what's going on in the world now, that people are very angry and a lot of riots. People are really angry and discontent with everything that's going on. And, you know, it does just kind of tie in, as we've been saying, that this album, in a lot of ways, is more relevant now than it's ever been.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's, for me, it's an endless powerful album that would be, even in 100 years from now, you could listen to it and think of it as if it was, as if it's been written the year before or something. So, yeah, for this, I totally agree. But then, again, like you said, you don't need to really understand all the inspiration of the song to make it your own. And that's what's so powerful about music. I mean, I also write song, and when I write a song, I'm inspired by something. But once the song is written, I give it to the audience, and the people, they do whatever they want with it. And some people, they don't even know, and they will never know what inspired me in the first place, but it doesn't matter, because it's, in the end, it's just music. And when you give out music, it doesn't mean that you have to agree with me with what I think. You have to agree with my political or with whatever. It's just music. So I'm inspired by something, and then I put out the music, and then you do whatever you want with it. This music, that's why I think this music is timeless. It's a little bit like the Beatles song. You're listening to the Beatles now, even kids. I have kids, and my kids, they listen to Beatles, and they love it. And they have no clue what John Lennon and Paul McCartney were inspired by when they wrote this song. And frankly, they don't even care. They just like it because these are beautiful songs, beautiful melodies, beautiful sounds. And that's the thing about Pink Floyd. I mean, at least these three albums, the Dark Side and the Wish You Were Here and Animals, I think that these are timeless albums.
So just before we kind of start to wind things up, we'll touch briefly on Pigs on the Wing Part 2. So obviously we talked a lot about it at the start of Part 1, only this time, as we've said, the sheep have fought back. There's that more hopeful slant. It's a lot more optimistic.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Consequence of Sound identify that Part 2 is a reminder that humans find ways to stick together even amidst the turmoil of a cravenly capitalist world. I mean, how does it? Obviously, you'd said that it felt like a strange track to start the album. How does it feel as a track to end the album? How does it end it for you?
Yeah, I think it's a message of love, like you said, because it was written as a love song in the first place. And so the message might be that in the end, love is the answer, and that if we learn to love and appreciate each other, that's how we may survive in the end. Even though Roger Waters hasn't been described as a very loving person. on a personal level, but I think that's I think that's the message here, and that's probably why he wanted also to finish on this optimistic side of it.
Yeah, and obviously it's something that you touched on, and I thought I would save it for this point. When you'd said obviously that there's, you know, that version of Pigs on the Wing where there's the guitar solo in the middle linking the two songs, and I don't know if you or anyone who's listening to this on the album on 8-track, they would know this, that obviously the 8-track had a loop play function, meaning that the album could play continuously without you having to turn over the cassette. So Pink Floyd kind of adapted the song to that, and they recruited Snowy White to record that guitar solo, and it actually links Part 2 back to Part 1, making it kind of a full song again, meaning that essentially the album could just go on forever and start another cycle.
Yeah. But they often did this. If you listen to Dark Side of the Moon, it's the same. It starts and ends the same way with the heartbeat. And also in The Wall, it also works like this. The end of the last song finishes with half a sentence, and the very first song starts with the other half of the same sentence. So I think it was something that they were used to do at that time to maybe encourage people to listen to it in the loop. I don't know.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously we've talked so much about this album. We've talked so much about kind of its relevance today, kind of the so much around it. Consequence of Sound wrote a fantastic article about the album's political resonance 40 years on, and I kind of touched on that a couple of times through our chat, but there's a part of it here that really sums up what makes this album such a fascinating commentary, and I'll just read it to you. So they said, although the three core tracks of Animals are lengthy, Waters' lyrics are not Florida over long. They're far more instrumental than vocal passages. The dominance of music over words is a critical part of the album's political commentary. No matter how much Waters tries to get his pig, dog, sheep allegory to play out, the music always pushes back, reminding those who think in terms of pigs and dogs that the world is more complicated than that. With that in mind, what is it, and you've said this album's timeless, what is it that makes this album stand the test of time for you?
Yeah, for me, again, like I said in the beginning, for me, first it's the sound and all the layers that they put out. It's just not someone strumming a guitar and someone banging a drum. There's so many parts, so many different layers, so many things happening. It's so complex. And at the same time, the melody, they are not complex at all. They are very easy to remember. So it's kind of very catchy in the end. The melody they're singing, you've got to be crazy, it's very catchy. It's not complicated. But then in the structure is very complex and very rich and very deep. And in this sense, I think it's not something, so it might be something that's a little difficult to apprehend on the first listening, of course. But I think it's something that will stay forever once you get it. On the contrary of a hit track that you would hear on radio 10 times a day, and then after, so you would like it from the first time, something that you will hear now on TV or something, but then later on you would get fed up with it because it's always the same. This album is never the same. And when it's the same, it just remind you a theme that was there before, so it has meaning. So, yeah, but for me, yeah, the music first. Of course, the lyrics, the subject is nice, especially if you read the book. But yeah, the music goes first. And the sound, I think the best sound that David Gilmour ever had, it was on this album.
And finally, why is Animals your classic album? And why should people check it out if they haven't already?
So first of all, because it mixes two things that I love, which is the psychedelic part, the atmospheric part of the music, which is something that I really like, and the very rock and heavy. And it's also something that I love in some of the bands. So I you know, I'm going to love bands like Guns N' Roses. I'm going to love bands like Supertramp, like Queen, and I think in this album, they mixed both of it between these two approach of music. So you have this quiet, long part, psychedelic, that's going to make you dreamy, you know, moody. And you have this very down to earth rock guitar riff. And also the drum and bass groove, like in Pig, like you said, that's very catchy. So yeah, for me that's what make it my personal favorite.
Well, thank you very much, Frank, for joining us. I've really enjoyed
it. Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you, Mike. Yeah.
Well, I might be biased, but I do think that was worth the wait. You know, recording that back in June, waiting quite a few months for you guys to hear it, but I'm really pleased that you've got to now. Thank you very much to Frank Carducci for coming on the show and chatting with me about Animals by Pink Floyd, a real heavyweight of an album. And, you know, for me, that love of Pink Floyd, as I've said, is quite recent. You know what I mean? I was quite late to the Pink Floyd party, but Animals is an album that just keeps giving and giving. And hopefully, you know, we will do more Pink Floyd albums as the months progress, as the years progress. I would love to get The Wall finally done, as we were planning to do last year, and Dark Side of the Moon and Wish You Were Here and all these albums. And, you know, absolutely, you know, hopefully more Pink Floyd in the future. Frank's album, The Answer, and obviously you heard Love is the Answer earlier on, that's out now. Fantastic album, thoroughly recommend it. I know that the moment that he's able to get over here to play shows, that he will be, and we'll make sure to let you guys know on the social media pages that Frank is coming. Absolutely worth checking out. And again, getting yourself over to frankcarducci.com to kind of check out some of his stuff.
And that'll do it for another episode of My Classic Album. After a year away, it certainly feels good to be back. It'll feel just as great in 4 weeks' time when we look back at 45 years at the opera, celebrating Queen's A Night at the Opera with Savannah Pope. Make sure you don't miss that. And of course, in 2 weeks' time, our next episode, we'll be looking at Carly Simon's third album, No Secrets, as chosen by my special guest, singer-songwriter and actress Noosh Gowgun, who some of you may know from Dead Pixels. Join Noosh and myself in a couple of weeks' time for an all-new episode of My Classic Album. Cheers!